Welcome to the Trailblazers podcast series by Periplum, sharing the experiences of trailblazers living and working in the Tees Valley, the innovators, activists, workers and adventurers, as told in their own words. Episode 15, Lisa Connor, Send Educator.
I'm Jennifer Essex, and we're in a room in Stockton-on-Tees in Norton. Can you tell us your full name?
Yes, it is Lisa Pauline Connor, and I'm laughing at the Pauline.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the east side of Middlesbrough in a council estate called Thorntree.
What was family life like?
Hectic and brilliant all at once. I have four older brothers, mum and dad. We lived in a three-bedroom council house. I'm the only girl and the youngest. And we had a cousin that lived with us and lots of friends and family who were always just crash hours. It was always a very busy, busy household with lots of craziness going on. It was brilliant. I loved it. Didn't have much money. You know, we didn't have materialistic things, but we had lots of fun playing lots of games and, yeah, just always playing out and just enjoying each other's company. Yeah, lovely.
What role did creativity play?
So when I was about two, it appeared that I was very active. And we thought it was probably because I was the only girl that I was a little bit, some might say, attention seeking. We now call it connection seeking. But I was very hyper. I was always on the move, singing songs and, you know. And I also had pigeon toes. And my mum took me to the doctors and the first advice was, oh, just swap her shoes to the wrong, you know, put a left one and a right one, etc. And that will help turn her feet out. So mum did that and people used to point and say, oh, your daughter's got her shoes on the wrong feet. So mum took me back and was like, this isn't working. And they said, oh, well, look, another doctor saw me and was like, oh, gosh, she's very energetic, isn't she? We think you should take her to dancing and that might help her. And so on my third birthday, I went to a dance class and stayed there ever since almost and just danced. And dance was my life, was my hobby. Even as a child, I just loved dancing. Dancing was my thing. Went to a dance school, a local dance school.
Do you have any memory of what that meant to you, what it felt like to be in the dance class?
Yeah, I think it was just everybody thinks I'm outgoing, but inside I'm sometimes, oh, don't ask me anything, don't talk to me. But on the outside, actually, I'll tell you what it is. When I was dancing, I felt like there was a value, and I'll probably talk about value quite a lot, but there was a value to what I was doing because people were watching and I knew I could entertain people and get their attention. But it just felt natural to me. It just felt like the most natural thing in the world, just to move. Definitely couldn't sit down, definitely couldn't. So just moving was very natural. Like somebody would blink or have an itch or something. Yeah.
What were some of your earliest experiences with teaching?
My first experience was teaching was a baby ballet class. And I was probably about 12, 13 years old. And I'd been dancing for such a long time that the dance teacher would then say to me, oh, Lisa, can you just go and work with those students there and do this particular exercise? Or she'd send me into another room with them. And I very quickly thought, this is great. I'm passing on something that I know and somebody's doing it and they're learning. And I remember thinking, I'm going to be a dance teacher when I grow up. That's what I want to do. And then at 15, I had my own dance baby ballet class. And then people go, really? I mean, you were only 15. But I had been dancing at that point for 12 years. So, yeah, that was my first experience. I just remember thinking, oh, I've showed them to do something. And you could immediately see an outcome. And then I thought I was going to be a dance teacher. That was it. Which didn't quite work out that way, but I was going to be a dance teacher.
Yeah, and you can see it's so nice with dance that you can see it. You can see people learning and developing. And like,
and the joy that it brought them as well, the same joy that it brought me, was like, oh my gosh, we've got something in common here. There was a common theme and a common ground, I guess, to experience something together. Lovely. Yeah, really nice moments.
So how did that experience of teaching and sharing and like building a common language and that joy of passing on knowledge, did that inform your life growing up in any way? Were there any stories that emerged as a result of that?
I think dancing was the only thing that I thought was of real value to me. When I was 9, I auditioned to be in a pantomime at Billingham Forum. And it was something that I ended up doing year after year after year. And I had to get a license to stay off school in order to dance in the pantomime. And we got paid to dance in the pantomime. And that was something I could take home for my mum and dad to say, I've earned this money and I'm 9 years old. And it was like, oh, actually, this is something that I could do. That I wasn't actually going there with this story, but getting a license off school, I remember I wasn't the brightest at school, I think it's fair to say. I remember finding it very difficult to read, finding it very difficult to concentrate. And when you applied for the license, it was because I would be off school for a number of weeks. And some of the teachers were a bit concerned that I would be off school. And Mum had gone to see the head teacher, who I used to have to go to special kind of reading sessions with. And he said, you know, she's a dancer, like, this is what she's good at, let's let her do it. So I was allowed every year to be off school for rehearsals and to work at Billingham Forum and dance. And at that time, there was only one set of like performers who danced. Now I think they kind of have A groups and B groups, and so they're not off school as much. But yeah, we were off every day, and sometimes we were doing 3 shows a day. And my dance teacher was very generous in terms of giving us wages, because she got a fee for, you know, providing the students. And we used to get a wage packet every week. And, you know, if we did something wrong, it would get docked. Our wages would get docked, or if our costume fell off or something. And it taught us really, it was about working in a professional environment at that time. But yeah, schooling was really, really tough for me. So my dancing was something that I could do and was able to be me. Yeah.
What was that experience like when you brought your first pay packet home to your parents?
I just always remember like wanting to share it. Money doesn't matter in terms of, you know, we weren't materialistic at all, but it was a struggle at home. And so I guess being able to contribute something for something that I'd worked at, but something that my mum used to clean the dance studios for me to be able to dance. So I was like giving it back, I guess. I'd say, right, that's for you. And it didn't even cover my shoes or anything. And then the rest of it, I could go and buy gifts for Christmas for my brothers and family and friends. So, but yeah, no, it gives you a sense of, you know, we don't do things for money. But equally, at the same time, it's our reward, isn't it? It's a reward of, you know, we all need it to eat and to survive. So it was something else that give it some worth as well. Because we can all turn around and say, oh, yeah, being creative is wonderful, and being creative is, you know, it's in my soul, or it's, you know. But actually, in the reality of things, we still need to be able to provide for our families or provide for ourselves, and, you know, so that has to have a consideration as well.
Valuing women's work, and valuing creative work, and valuing girls' work, like all of those things. That money is how we show value in our society.
I think as well, it gave me like an independence quite early on to think, oh, actually, I can do this. I'm not going to rely on my mum and dad. I always relied on my mum and dad, but not from a financial point of view, because it wasn't even an option. So if I wanted to change something, if I wanted to get something, I had to make sure I could do that by myself. I was never going to rely on anybody financially to do that for me. I think that must have been an early decision that I made. And now thinking about it, getting that first pay packet at 9 years old must have had something to do with that, must have done, to kind of say, actually, this is great, you know, I've got choices, because that's what money does. It gives you choices, doesn't it? It gives you choices to do things. So, yeah.
Who were some of your icons and role models? Did they change?
Oh, definitely change. Yeah. Funnily enough, and now I won't mention any names at all, but this dance teacher, you know, her first day at the dance school was my first day at the dance school. And I was very loyal to the dance teacher, as you would be. And, you know, did see that she was a businesswoman as well as somebody who taught me how to dance and to do the thing that I absolutely loved to do. But as I got older and started to get, you know, I went to college to do performing arts, met other teachers, other tutors, and then thought, this is something that I want to do. I started to think, well, actually, maybe that kind of teacher isn't the kind of teacher I want to be. That's not the person, that's not the role model that I want to give my students. So I very quickly started to question some people's motivations, I guess, and some people's teaching methods, and how they conducted themselves has a massive impact on your students. And I think that's really important. It becomes about core values. And as I was maturing, I didn't have the same core values as those people who I once admired. So I started to kind of, you know, one of my school teachers, he was my drama teacher, and he was a huge influence to me. And he became a good friend in later life. And he was a very knowledgeable man, very knowledgeable in the way that he would get you to come up to the conclusions yourself rather than just, you know, and I guess as a dance teacher, you say, do this step and do this step and da, 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 where I believe a good teacher would let you explore and would let you make mistakes and have the freedom to make mistakes. Well, you know, I could talk a lot about that and celebrate those mistakes, exploring and creating. And so, yeah, my drama teacher was a massive influence on me. Very, very wise man, I would say. Yeah.
Is it challenging within education now to have that philosophy of experimentation?
Yeah. So basically, I left school with one GCSE pass. That was it. And that was in drama, because I did struggle, really struggled at school, and was always in my head, oh, I'm going to be a dance teacher, I'll be absolutely fine. But then got injured and then thought, actually, maybe I've put all my eggs in one basket here. But I was always, I really enjoyed the drama side of it and the performing arts side. So school gave me that, I think. And the dancing gave me the confidence to explore the other arts. And then, it's a very long story, but I went to college, had to do extra years at college because I didn't get the qualifications. And then I went on to university and again, struggled with the essays, struggled with the writing. And I started off, you know, getting E's, F's in my essays, and I would rewrite them and thought, okay, this is my opportunity here. So I'd rewrite them even after the deadline and say to the tutor, what can I do to make this better? What is it that I need to do? And again, he identified that there was probably a need for me to get some extra help with writing. So they arranged that for me. And then I kept on just working. And it felt like I just soaked everything up. I had a little bit of imposter syndrome. And I was like, oh my gosh, everybody here, their parents, you know, bailing them out if they're getting their overdraft. And when I went for a student loan, I said, if I die, who has to pay this back? And they were like, yeah, I don't know. Nobody's ever asked us that before. And I was like, my mum and dad, they can't pay this back. And again, that was about trying to protect people. So I just loved university. It was wonderful. again, I still had all the energy, still had all the drive, I think, just to find out my dance tutor there. I did a communication arts degree in media and performance, but I majored in dance. And my dance tutor, every time he spoke, I just got it. Like, I knew exactly what he was talking about. He would say things and it just seemed to click. It just seemed to, not the first time, but again, it was a language that I understood. It was something that just became so natural to me. I still had to work hard, but it was just my language. I found it easy to work at, where sitting behind a desk wasn't easy for me at all. Sitting wasn't easy for me at all. So, yeah, it's something that I soaked up, had my own key to the dance studio, would be there 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, always had 3 jobs at university. Again, it was that thing of, I'm not going to rely on anybody. I have to do this, you know, myself. And yeah, I just loved it. So yeah, so my dance tutor, again, he was a massive influence. And it's the people who have given me the belief that I can do anything I put my mind to. And there was a point where I would believe that, but actually now I don't think it's true, because I was never going to be an astronaut. Didn't matter how much I would try, if my brain doesn't help me with my maths, I'm never going to be an astronaut. Mm. So I think much later in life, I think I was lucky that I found the thing I found most natural to do. I just worked really hard to be the best that I could be at it. You know, I'm never going to be a mathematician, and it doesn't matter how much I try. My brain doesn't work like that. My focus isn't there. So when people say you can do anything, you put your mind to it, I don't think that's always true. I think you can work hard at something, but I think you have to find that thing that you really want to do, or the thing that you love doing. I don't want people to think that I believe in limitations, because we all need to have high standards. But equally, just because I put my mind to something isn't going to make me something that I'm not.
Not acknowledging barriers doesn't mean they just don't exist.
Yes.
You need to see the world and
yes.
Where necessary, take the barriers away. And
yeah.
Where necessary, go around. And do you think that your teaching methodology has developed somehow around that philosophy? Or how do you approach that?
I think teaching in a SEND school, which I do now, has massively changed from me teaching into a mainstream. Because in a mainstream, I would say, you can put your mind to anything, or you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. But actually, the reality is, I don't want to curb people's dreams, but we have to be realistic as well. You know, some of the students who I work with say, oh, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a teacher. They're not going to achieve that. Some of them may never be able to write their name, but they want to be a doctor or they want to be a teacher. They might not even have that understanding of what that is. You know, what I would normally say to my students, my mainstream students, I would say, find that thing you want to spend your day. How do you want to spend your day? And then just be the best that you can be at that. And if you can do that, then the work and everything else will come to you. And I think that's something that I must have learned quite early on, that actually this is my thing, I'm going to work at it and be the best that I can be and see where it takes me. So yes, I put my mind to it and I can achieve, but you know, that's because I was lucky enough to find my language, find what I was able to do. Yeah.
So people know you're a teacher and you're the creative director at Briarwood School.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about your role there?
Yes, I am. I'm very lucky. I have the best job in the world. I genuinely mean that. I am the creative director there. I was mainstream at Acklam Grange School for almost 20 years. I started off as a drama teacher there and then became the head of faculty. So I was in charge of music, dance, drama, photography, art, and loved it. Absolutely loved it there. It was a beautiful, beautiful school, beautiful people, students amazing. And I was actually in Africa with some students on a project. And a lady said to me, oh, you know, this is a school called Priory Woods and our creative director's retiring in a couple of years. You know, you should have a look at that. And I was like, no, I'm fine. I'm a mainstream school. I love this school. I love my job. Anyway, 2 years later, the job came up and I went and had a look at it. And it was just the most amazing place. And the students were just amazing. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to try and work here. And so I was very lucky to do that. And the lady whose job I got was a wonderful lady. And, you know, Priory Woods is a creative arts school or college. And it was through her, and I'm sure other people, but she was a real pioneer for the arts for SEND students. So I felt like I had these huge shoes to fill, but I was really excited to do so. And these students, they do dance classes, they do art, they do music, they do drama, and it is a really, truly a special place. I've been there for 6 years and I would say it's changed. The cohort's changed. So again, we've had to really adapt what we are doing and how we teach creative. And every day I'm learning still, but I've learned so much in that time. I'm really, really grateful for it. Really grateful.
How important is it that we support kids with accessibility requirements and nurture their creativity?
As a creative director of children with special needs and young people with special needs, I'm obviously going to say that that is the most important subject, is the most important thing. Funny enough, yesterday I was asked about well-being generally in school, you know, what we do for the well-being of our students, and I immediately just replied with the nature of the arts lends itself to promote well-being for all students, especially our students, by giving value to something. I think is so important, and everybody, and I do mean everybody, can be creative and everybody can achieve in the arts. And I think that's a really, really important message to give. And I've worked with some amazing companies, fully booked, obviously, on. But I work with a theatre company called Bamboozle, and they create work specifically for SEND children. And I have learned so much. And it's about giving value without giving praise. There's a lot of research on praise and not giving praise. You know, we might say, oh, good boy, good girl, well done for doing that. But actually, what does that realistically mean? You know, if somebody draws you a picture and you say, oh, that's a really good picture, what does that mean? That's not really giving value. It doesn't really have any credit. Where if you notice the picture and you notice what's in the picture or how that picture makes you feel, how it makes them feel, more importantly, that's giving it value. And, you know, we're human beings, we want to feel valued. And I think by giving value, we are giving people confidence. And that's only ever good for our well-being. Last week, I was working with the Royal Shakespeare Company. And again, it was a SEND conference. And they are trying to learn from practitioners like myself and other schools about how to make Shakespeare more accessible. Every single child in my school is currently studying, exploring Macbeth. Last year we did Romeo and Juliet. Next year it will be something different. And they have done a great research project called Time to Act, where they took students, some of them with profound learning disabilities, and the research was about their well-being before the project that they did using the RSC's pedagogy, and the results were incredible. And I think all of the arts does that, you know. But to think, oh, Shakespeare, oh, it's ever so, you know, it's not accessible at all, especially in East Middlesbrough with children with some of them profound learning disabilities, or what's the value of that? Why do they possibly need to know Shakespeare? Because you also get that. And it's very accessible and it does give value and it almost puts everybody on a level understanding of it as well. So I think the question was, how important is it? It's incredibly important. And that's not just drama. I can speak drama because that's a subject that I teach and I'm very passionate about. But I think music, art, dance, it is about giving value to people. I certainly felt valued when I'm dancing, whether somebody's watching me or not. If I'm dancing in my bedroom on my own as a teenager, if I'm singing in the shower, if I'm, you know, doodling on a piece of paper, it's value, isn't it? And as humans, we all want to be entertained. We all have that downtime of wanting to be entertained. So therefore, we're seeking that. So creativity is incredibly important. What I should say is a lot of people think that they aren't creative. Sometimes I walk into a room or somebody asks me, what do you do? I'm the creative. I go, oh, you wouldn't get me doing that. You know, I'm not creative. And actually, you are. You might just be creative in something different. You know, we need creative mathematicians. We need creative engineers. Creativity is all around us. We're looking in a beautiful room right now. Everything in this room has been designed. Everything has been created by somebody. You know, even the technology that we're recording on has been created and designed. And that brings creativity. So it's incredibly important for everybody because everybody should feel valued in whatever your ability or disability. I think that's really important. So, yes.
So you were working on this project with the Royal Shakespeare
Well, I wasn't working on the research project. They were working with two local schools, actually one local school in Stratford and one school in Cambridge. But I was part of, you know, they were sharing the results and things with us. Where the project that I'm currently with them is helping them to make it even more accessible to everybody.
And what kind of contributions have you offered?
We spent an afternoon kind of sharing what they could do as a company to help out. So an example was, it was quite interesting. They were letting us know what they are currently doing for their provision. They said, oh, you know, we have some props and costumes that, you know, people can go and touch and feel beforehand. And we were saying, yeah, that's lovely. That's great. Actually, it was another teacher said, some of my students would see those props and costumes on stage and think, oh, that's okay. I can go and touch them. And they were like, oh, right. We hadn't thought about that. And I said, but why can't they? Why can't the students go and touch them on stage? Why are we limiting them? Because if they have no understanding of what they can and can't do, or they want to go and be part of that immersive experience, why aren't we giving them that? And yes, we have to look after their safety, but let's make it safe for them. Like, if we are being truly inclusive, you know, you want Shakespeare to be truly inclusive, let them come up, let them touch the actors, let them touch the costumes, let them be part of it. And again, that probably came from my work with Bamboozle Theatre Company, because that's exactly what they would do. You know, they create pieces of work where whatever the students are doing, and they see the value. If a student's walking up and down or pacing, for example, it doesn't mean to say that they're not listening. It doesn't mean to say that they're not focusing. Just because somebody's not making eye contact with you, it doesn't mean to say that they are not listening to what you're saying, or if somebody is stimming in a corner, or somebody is, you know, it should be that we have a real good understanding of everybody's needs. I think people think disability and accessibility, there's a whole different level that we don't see as a society. And that's really sad, actually. We don't see SEND schools at the moment. We don't see them out and about. Sometimes it's not safe because we haven't created an environment for them to be safe, which is sad. So they come to our school and we create that world for them, which is safe and creative and a learning environment that they can thrive in. Yeah. You know, I think it's so important. And again, when we're talking about value, about giving people the freedom to express themselves. We're born with that, aren't we? We're exploring all the time, you know, and it's not until adults stop us doing that and puts limitations on us often. And sadly, sometimes that is in schools. Currently, it's still happening. So, so sad for the creative arts, I think, in education now, is that we are teaching children to test. That's what we are doing. And even at GCSE level, we are saying to students, if you say this line in this particular way, this is what will happen. You will get this particular mark because that's what the examiners are looking for. If you write this in this particular way, you will get more marks for it. What? Why on earth are we doing that? Like, that's not being creative. That's not exploring. That's not, you know, we are limiting. We are absolutely limiting. And thankfully, not having those constraints in an SEND school does give that total freedom, and giving somebody the freedom of expression, again, gives them value, which again makes them a whole person and is better for their well-being and them as humans.
What are some moments that you're proud of?
Oh, I need to think about this maybe, but pride's a really difficult thing to talk about, I think. I think those moments come, this is going to sound really, really cheesy, so apologies, because I don't quite know how to articulate it, but it's not any one event or working with the Royal Shakespeare Company or working with Bamboozle Theatre Company and trying to drive things forward, or Tin Arts that I work with, or other people that I have the privilege of trying to pick their brains and how they work. It's those moments in the classroom when you see a wow moment, or you see the joy or that recognition that, oh, I've just achieved something, or I've just done something, or you can see them when they look at their own work in the art room. It's those things that I would say every day, that's the proud moments. And it's not proud of what I've done, it's proud for them. Yeah, I couldn't go, oh, actually, it was on the 12th of September when we did a production where all the students, you know, created it themselves and they come up with their own ideas, because that was really important to me, that they take ownership for their work and it is their work. And it is, oh, I do want to say this actually, how important the process is and not the end product. I think that is super, super important for educators. And that's, I think, what we're getting wrong. You know, again, if you go back to your dancing and then being entertained, we all sit there and want to be wowed by some kind of performance or show, and oh my gosh, wasn't that amazing, wasn't that wonderful? But we're never really thinking about the process of where that started to get to that point. And I think, again, working at Priory Woods was something that I learned very quickly. It is about the process, it is about those achievements along the way and not just about the end product. Yeah, I think those elements of pride is seeing those wow moments. And you do see them every day. And it could be the first time somebody's touched a new material or somebody's explored in a way that they've not done so before. Yeah, I would say that's what makes me proud.
Thank you for listening to Periplum's Trailblazers podcasts, funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. To listen to more of the series and follow our projects, visit our website at periplumheritage.com.